This is Changemakers with Katie Gore, finding the right solutions for the affordable housing community.
This week's changemaker is Zach Giffen. Zach is at the forefront of the tiny home movement and hosts of the popular television show Tiny House Nation. Zach is also the vice president of the Tiny Home Industry Association and board member and national spokesperson of Operation Tiny Home, a national nonprofit that supports people struggling with housing instability and homelessness. Zach, welcome to the podcast.
Hey, thank you so much for having me.
Zach, most people know you as one of the hosts of Tiny House Nation, and I want to talk about that experience. But first, I've heard that you're really kind of a big deal on the ski slopes before becoming a reality TV star. How did that happen?
It happened pretty quickly, and I don't take any credit for it. But essentially, I had been kind of working really hard on this dream of being a professional skier. I had built a tiny house along the way in order to kind of really facilitate that whole project. And then my little brother made a film. It's a really beautiful film. It's called Livin' Tiny, L-I-V-I-N. It was produced in like 2012. And so eventually, a couple of years later, I got a call from somebody who was interested in making a television show about a tiny home, and they needed a carpenter. The requirements were like I be between the age that I exactly was, have built and lived in a tiny house, could speak the language of carpentry, and because of my experience with like skiing in that world, I had some experience with cameras. So all of that kind of clicked together.
Well, this was definitely divine because there are not a lot of people with those kinds of credentials. And, you know, your accomplishments range from tiny house celebrity to producer to carpenter to designer, like you said. And if someone's really meeting you for the first time and they have no idea what you do, like, what do you say to them?
I just tell them I'm a carpenter.
That's much easier, right?
Yeah, because that's the base of it. You know, that's where it all started. You know, carpentry was a job that allowed me to kind of pursue the dream of skiing because I could take off time in the wintertime. And then, I mean, far before I ever heard of tiny houses, I had bought an RV that was dilapidated and I rebuilt the inside. I put the roof on. I did wood cabinets and wood floors. So, you know, before I'd ever heard about tiny homes, I'd kind of gone down a number of different directions exploring this concept, which was really just about having a home on wheels. And to me, I saw all these advantages because my life was in one place in the wintertime and in one place in the summertime, and having a home on wheels meant I could kind of take my space regardless. It just allowed me to keep my options open. And I think that I have actually felt like I can be a pretty good ambassador for the tiny home movement just because I did have that very authentic time in my life where minimalizing so that I could pare down on the expenses of my life so I could kind of really push into a passion of mine, and utilizing kind of tiny homes and tiny living to do that really paid off and it worked.
You know, you called it a movement, and it's really more than a trend. You know, it's a splash of a revolution almost, isn't it? And, you know, at the core, it's a house plan and a lifestyle. But how do you characterize this?
Well, it's interesting because in tiny homes, under the umbrella of what people talk about when they say tiny homes, there's a variety of different types of housing options. There's the tiny homes that are, you know, what we do with veterans, where we're building very kind of simplistic homes in a village concept with kind of a big community building and wraparound services. That's like one kind of tiny home model, but it's not the tiny home model that we're using in some of our other programs, which are, you know, more like they're like $100,000 homes that just happen to be on wheels. And so it's hard to just be really specific about what it is, whether it's a movement or this or that. But what I like to say is that, you know, a tiny home is just any space where 100% of the area is utilized. So it doesn't really matter what the size is. And I think that the awareness has kind of seeped into broader society now, where people that aren't necessarily living tiny are much more aware of the space that they're wasting. And I think that if you're going to talk about a movement, that's really what it is. It's like a pendulum swing back from excess to recognizing, hey, all this stuff might not necessarily just be making us happy. And what we're trading for this stuff is really our time and our money. So I think that that to me is kind of what the movement's about. It's really a movement of minimalism. When we're talking about the actual housing types, it's a little different because a tiny home on wheels is not the same as a tiny home on a foundation. However, it is a really fantastic time to be talking about tiny homes and especially tiny homes on wheels right now. And that's because of all of the places that have kind of opened up city ordinances to allow tiny homes on wheels in backyards.
Well, and that's what I was wondering is if there's a specific definition of a tiny home, you know, does it have to be, you know, no bigger than, you know, or does it have to be on wheels or mobile or, you know, what is the commonly accepted definition of a tiny home? But I hear you saying that it's really more of anything that believes in minimalism or, you know, doesn't focus on excess space. And what's interesting, you know, and one of the many reasons we have you on this podcast is, you know, we've focused on affordable housing, trying to find housing alternatives for people who are either on fixed incomes or, you know, they're underemployed maybe, and looking at alternative ways to provide housing and not assume that the standard 15-story building is the model to provide affordable housing. And you know, what I'm hearing you describe are concepts that are committed to alternative housing. And I want to go through some of that because the one of the things you mentioned was this veterans housing. Tell us what, you know, something that you guys have started and you've seen some real success here, but tell us about Operation Tiny Home.
I got involved with Operation Tiny Home in 2015. And we really started out as mostly focused on veterans. And the idea was that we were helping to construct these tiny home villages that would be transitional housing for homeless veterans. And all of the villages are kind of small, very basic structures, typically on a foundation, typically centered around a community building that has kind of a network of supportive services around it. And to me, it was, I got involved because I was on TV and there was people reaching out saying, hey, I want to start this. Hey, I get this idea. And everybody kind of had the same idea. And it was kind of what I just described. So what we've done is we've kind of traveled around the country, and the program started out as these workshops that we'd go into a community, myself and a bunch of professionals, and we'd teach community members how to construct these homes. So by the end of a three-day workshop, we'd have constructed really the majority of one of their tiny homes for the village. And what that does is it's not necessarily so much just about building a home. It's about getting a visual example of what that vision looks like constructed. And with the awareness that when you demonstrate a physical example of a concept, it's so much easier for it to impact people and them to be able to kind of get on board with the whole idea. And so that plan, you know, that's been the overarching objective in my mind with Operation Tiny Home, is that we're not necessarily just building tiny homes. We're not just helping these villages get constructed. What we're really doing is helping this concept get out there into the public so people can see it, so other cities can realize that they also have a veterans population that could benefit from this type of project, and they try to emulate it into their space. And what I do feel very strongly about and very happy to say is that I feel like we have really turned the corner on that. The awareness is out there. There has been enough success stories, examples out in the world to show what this concept can do, that people are really getting on board.
I watched several of your videos and I was so impressed with not just the concept, not just the village, but seeing the veterans really building their own home. And, you know, Habitat for Humanity has long invested that kind of equity and investment that they, you know, have of their participants. But there was something different in the veterans building their home alongside other veterans. And tell us the synergy and why this is so life motivational for each of those recipients of the homes.
Okay, well, you know, the projects just in themselves, the workshops are a very powerful experience for most of the participants. And I think it is because they are, we do have community members that are non-veterans, but it's by and large, it's all veterans getting together to learn how to do this, but also to create something that's going back to one of their brothers or sisters. So it's got this like deeper heaviness to the whole thing. But at the same time, I feel like it's just a rare opportunity for veterans to get back together in a group and feel that camaraderie that people undeniably, almost universally experience when they're in the military, of having that sense of everybody's got each other's back. And that is one of the big things that goes missing, I think, for many people when they get back into civilian life. So being able to replicate that just in a little bit, I think is fantastic. But it's also just understanding that this problem of veterans homelessness is just been persisting too long, I guess, and that we need to really get it together. And so people are just, they're so happy to be a part of it. And yeah, it's been just a tremendous thing for me to be a part of as well, because as a non-veteran person, as actually, you know, my family's Quaker, so we're, you know, going into the military isn't really part of what we do, but just to kind of be involved and helping in some way in that for a couple of years, it's been really very gratifying.
Are there some cities that you have seen embrace tiny homes more than another? Because I think the city that was featured in the veterans one, I believe, was Austin. And, you know, are there other cities that you want to shout out as really being, I don't know, you know, do you say pro tiny home, or that have a structure or zoning that allows it?
In terms of the villages, the veterans villages, there are a variety of different cities that are opening up to this kind of concept big time. Seattle, you know, has got a plan to make 50 different villages. Kansas City is the site of the VCP, and that's the village that I would say is kind of like the flagship example of what this kind of thing can be. And so the city of Kansas City is extremely proud of it. And now they're actually kind of franchising the idea, opening one in St. Louis. And so in terms of the village, it's catching on, but every single place still requires you to go to the city and get special permission for this type of construction. So there is no place that I know of where it's just kind of like, hey, if you buy some land, you can just do it. You're essentially going to need permission to kind of have that kind of density no matter where you're at. However, this is a fantastic time to really be talking about tiny homes that are not on foundations, because that's the real challenge in terms of legality. Tiny homes on foundations, it's more of a density issue and a zoning issue, but there's legal ways that you can construct them to building codes. Tiny homes on wheels, one of the reasons that it's so hard to define, for me to give you an answer of what a tiny home is, one of the hardest parts of that is that there is no legal definition. And so my role as, you know, on the board and as vice president of the Tiny Home Industry Association, our whole purpose is to try to bring the industry together to get some consensus and start talking about getting universal building standards in place for tiny homes. That's a big process, and a lot of cities aren't waiting for us to do it. They're just going ahead and legalizing this kind of concept and then coming up with their own definition. The first city to do it was Fresno, California. And since then, the idea kind of paused for a little while, but the first major city to enact a tiny home friendly zoning policy was the city of Los Angeles. And that was in January of 2020. And since then, by the end of the year, most of California's major population centers have opened up to tiny homes as ADUs and backyards. And that's also containing some of the most expensive parts of our country, the most expensive places to live, like San Jose and San Diego and Oakland and Portland, Oregon and Silicon Valley. They've all opened up to tiny homes as accessory dwelling units and backyards.
So what is the resistance that's out there? You know, why would a city not want to do this?
I would argue that people who live nomadic lifestyles have always been viewed with distrust in some degree by human society, right? Think of the gypsies or nomadic tribes. And so we've always put in place some kind of barriers to make that style of lifestyle difficult, or at least push it to the outskirts of town. And I think that what's happening is that in modern society, people are moving so much more frequently. Jobs are requiring people to be more flexible. And so the desirability or the appeal of having a home that you can take with you as opposed to upending your life every time you have to move and moving into a new apartment has some appeal to it. However, I think the changing ways that people are living are not the only reason that's really kind of, I'd say, tipping the scale in favor of tiny home legality right now. And the biggest thing is that almost 50% of our country are single adults.
This is such an interesting lifestyle. Are there life discoveries that come from tiny home living?
I would argue that a tiny home doesn't require the level of minimalism that most people think it does. And the reason for that is that the vast majority of people moving into tiny homes are single adults. And the tiny homes that they're moving into are essentially really nice one-bedroom apartments. So other than maybe having some kind of little less storage, it's not really a whole lot different than being in a one-bedroom apartment. The trade-off is that you get the yard, you know, you get the outdoor space. That being considered, I would say that these homes are uniquely qualified to be a good housing solution for our country because, not because we want everybody to live minimalistly, it's that they're appropriately designed for the needs of singles. And at this point, nearly half our country is single adults. And when you add that in combination with the 25% of our country, which is, like my wife and I, are married without children, who are also arguably appropriately housed in a one-bedroom apartment, tiny homes really become not necessarily about, okay, I'm going to live a minimum lifestyle, and more about, I'm going to move into something that can be high quality, that's appropriately designed for the needs of where I'm at in my life right now. And when you contrast the large percentage of our country that is, you know, single adults, 50%, couples without children, and then you recognize and that our housing stock has only 12% one-bedroom homes and apartments, what you're recognizing is that there's this vast misalignment between what we've been building and what is existing within our supply and the needs of modern population. And that's why when people ask me, oh, well, tiny homes, can they actually impact our housing crisis? Well, my answer is maybe not necessarily what people are thinking of tiny homes, but small homes or homes of smaller size. What it will do is will increase the amount of smaller dignified options. And what it will do was enable the people who are trapped in large homes because there are so few smaller options to potentially downsize. And that has real significant potential to have an effect because at this point, there's over 35 million homes are occupied by single people, single adults. So if we can develop better solutions, if these laws can allow us to develop more options and better, more dignified options for people to downsize, what it will do is free up a lot of that housing surplus and be able to create housing that will go and help combat the affordability issue. And we don't have to build homes. We're just utilizing our existing supply more efficiently.
What kind of trends are you seeing in this space? Are we seeing any growth year over year in people moving into tiny homes?
Well, the trend has been that people are doing it regardless of whether it's being allowed. And that's been the vast majority of the tiny home movement for the entire time that I've been a part of it, right? And so these new places that I'm talking about, Los Angeles, you know, kind of starting in California, and it's really turning kind of a domino effect of cities opening to this policy. These are really the first places in the country where you can legitimately live in a tiny home on wheels. And actually why it's such an amazing time to talk about tiny homes on wheels right now is because last week, the state of Maine just enacted a new state law enabling tiny homes or movable accessory dwelling units, and that's statewide. And so that is a huge precedent because, like I said, I mean, this is the first time that we are allowing, other than mobile homes that are built to HUD codes and really limited by very restrictive zoning, this is the first time that we're allowing any type of structure that's on a non-permanent foundation to be lived in. to me, what that really is about, like I said before, it's this question of, okay, well, what is that significance of mobility? When you're talking about affordable housing, what it is it means that the people who need to develop housing and need solutions can go ahead and do it. It's an attainable solution for the people on the lower end of the spectrum that really need solutions most. In order to understand exactly why mobility is such a big distinction and can have such a significance, you have to look at what holds back traditional accessory dwelling units from really having much effect on housing affordability or the rental market in an area. And the people that can afford to build accessory dwelling units in their backyard, that can afford the mortgage and afford another construction loan to do that, typically lack the financial incentive to share the property or to rent out their backyard. So the reason that mobility is so significant when we're talking about ADUs is that it completely takes that dynamic and throws it on its head. Because now, say you have a property and you could use a rental income. Well, you don't have to shoulder that upfront expense. You can simply run utilities out to your backyard. I can purchase a tiny house or finance a tiny house. And you and I, we can partner. You rent me the backyard. I have this certain amount of ownership because I own the tiny home. And then you're collecting a rental income. And it becomes a solution that actually works for people.
You know, I believe this is so creative because, you know, here we are as a nation, like you mentioned, in an affordable housing crisis. And, you know, here we're talking about something that is quite innovative, but not overly complex. And that's why I like this concept so much, because, you know, with a couple of things in place, this is very, very feasible. And it solves a lot of accessibility and affordability problems that we're having right now as a nation. So I'm glad that you guys and the Tiny Home Industry Association, that you guys are really making some inroads here. And also some of these cities are choosing to allow this and get creative. You know, I want to ask you a question, and this is just, you know, really kind of random here, but as an advocate of tiny homes, what have you seen be some of the best design surprises or compliments in tiny homes?
That's a lovely question. I feel very strongly that what makes a tiny home is that it's built to the same or at least as good of standards that we expect from typical residential construction, right? And so, you know, that's what we're trying to do in the industry association is get some kind of practical common sense requirements for construction the way that the IRC has. It's might be smaller, but it's built just as quality. And that's the beauty of it, is that it's saying, hey, my house might not be like a mansion, but it's just as quality. What I have to say is that because it's small, you can take it to a lot further extremes than you could a large home. So I always encourage people to not just make their tiny home as good as other homes, but try to recognize that they can make it actually way cooler. They can make it way custom for an affordable price because the size actually allows that. So to get specific, what I love, and if you watch the show Tiny House Nation, you know this already, what I love is transformation. I want always my stuff and the things that impress me to be as close as you push a button and then the house like expands and moves and contracts and things, you know, push around, right? That's not always possible. You can't always push a button. So what it is that I love is I love the simple solutions that create transforming spaces, not like the automatic ones, but kind of simple mechanical solutions to transform your space, because the simplicity means it's affordable, right?
Right. So let's talk about Tiny House Nation. I mean, I've had a previous podcast guest who was a New York Times bestseller, but you are the first guest that we've had who has had their own TV show. So talk to us about Tiny House Nation. They're all on Netflix now. Tell us what the TV show was like and walk us down that path here.
Tiny House Nation was kind of the very first tiny home television show in that space. And it's a reality TV show where myself and my co-host, John Weisbarth, we travel the country and we help people who are already going to live in tiny homes. And we come in and really just help them pull it off in a better way, I suppose. I don't know. Yeah, we help people. We show up and we help people kind of recognize their tiny home dreams. And my job is to be the custom carpenter that will take what their vision is and then add in elements that really make their space work for them. And then my buddy John, his job is really to help them go through the process of downsizing and just getting ready for a life that is going to be very much different than what their typical life used to be. Yeah, it's something I'm extremely proud of. You know, we did 84 episodes and a few other specials, and each one of those episodes was a home. And every single one was a crazy amount of work. And even though it's reality TV, the one big reality aspect of it was that we were on a time frame and we were just jamming. And it was just everything we could do to get these homes built by the time that we had to. And it would not have been possible for me to put in that much work and be happy about it if I didn't actually believe in what the whole premise of the show was about.
What was your favorite episode?
My favorite episodes always have to do with like my projects, you know? It's hard to say. I mean, obviously the ones that stand out, which were just like, it just felt like a different reality and wasn't actually my life, was when we built homes for like Deion Sanders. We built Deion Sanders a home. We built one for a guy named Little John. So like the celebrity homes were kind of a surreal feeling and were always a big treat for me. But other than that, I just, you know, it was about the families that we'd work with. And it was about the homes. And then most importantly, it was about whether or not I felt like I did a good job, because if I didn't feel like I did a good job, I just like, no matter what else was good with it, I couldn't be happy.
You know, I was watching your video when you and a bunch of ski buddies were all loaded into your tiny home. And I, you know, I wondered, I thought, you know, are we going to see in the next few years, the RVs, they all go to a specific place, you know, are we going to see locations and lots that are around recreational areas or high density areas or high cost areas, where now instead of RV lots where people are coming to vacation, are we going to have, you know, neighborhoods and suburbs that are all tiny homes? And, you know, we're talking about this now, but, you know, maybe in 5 years, you know, everybody looks back and was like, well, of course we had that. Of course we needed that. And that's where we went. And, you know, why was that even a question? And why was that considered creative? And, you know, you kind of want to fast forward and be like, you know, if there's fiber and Wi-Fi, then yes, the neighborhoods will come. But is that how you guys are envisioning some of these, you know, growth paths to happen?
Well, you know, the van life phenomenon is just exploding, right? Especially through COVID, people kind of wanting to get away from their house and then have their own little spot where they didn't go into a hotel. The popularity of that concept just really massively hit a jump. Nomadland just won Best Picture, right?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it is in the zeitgeist right now, for sure. And the housing affordability has a role to play in it too, because people are calculating that into their decision-making process. They're calculating all the stress that they have being in these expensive apartments. And then they're looking at the trade-off of just having like a smaller space, but also on wheels and all of the massive advantages in terms of, hey, if you can get a life that where you work remotely and you can work from anywhere, and then you have a vehicle that can take you everywhere, the combination is pretty powerful. So I think it's this new phenomenon of working from home and remote working, coupled with just the cost of housing is creating this whole other element to what I would say the tiny home movement to be probably the fastest growing area right now. What van life, campers, and living on the road.
I had a good friend of mine who, you know, lost his job during the pandemic, and he converted a van and moved out to Utah and got a job out there. And you know, like, it's just amazing how people have just, this pandemic oddly changed people's, you know, values when it came to that. And, you know, there are lots of people know stories who they were, change was forced upon them and they picked this path. That leads me to my next question here. You've recently launched a podcast. So tell our listeners, you know, what are you covering on the podcast and how's that going?
Yeah. Okay. Well, the podcast is myself and my co-host, John Weisbarth. And it's a little bit of a way for us to just get back together because we haven't been doing the show for about a year, a little more than a year now. So we're just a way to get together and have some fun. But we're also exploring all these concepts of tiny homes and how tiny homes can essentially work as tools for different solutions for society. So, you know, we bring in guests who are either people who inspire hope or they're a story of innovation or a story of impact. We just kind of talk to them and find out their tricks. And what my goal is to, you know, learn from people so that I can package that knowledge back into my messaging when I start talking about this. The one common thread in tiny homes is that they have not been legal, right? And so until we overcome that hurdle, we're not really going to be talking about a viable housing option. Like, you know, we were just talking about people like the Nomad Land group, which it's a lifestyle that's required to be completely mobile all the time and never stay in one place. Because as soon as you try to stay in one place, you're going to be breaking the law in some capacity. And that's why, as an advocate for the movement, I love that part. You know, I myself am all about the van life, but as an advocate, I'm much more interested in the policies like what has happened in Maine, where they're allowing tiny homes to actually be lived in full time. The piece to me, and also it comes back to my work with homeless veterans and Operation Tiny Home, is that we have to do something about supporting citizens of this country to be better support structures for one another. And what I see is when you talk to people on the street, a very common denominator of the story is you'll hear about before they got onto the street and they were living there, they went through a series of kind of burning bridges, sleeping on couches with friends and family until they really didn't have any options left. But it's not that people like sleep on couches until there's no options. What it is it's an inherent intrusion in the person's life that is trying to give you a spot. But it's this huge indignity on the person who is sleeping on the couch. And so the statistics is like, if, you know, by the time somebody has slept on three different friends and family's couches, they typically stop asking. And it's because they know it's an inherent intrusion, right? So allowing like a tiny home in a backyard, what it does is it makes it so that a friend or a family can, without building a permanent fixture in the backyard, can say, yeah, my brother's having a hard time. Let's get him in a tiny house and put him in the backyard. We can kind of look over them a little bit, but essentially it's a way to allow ourselves to provide support structures without it being such an inherent intrusion in our life, the same way it is if we ask somebody to sleep on our couch or even in a guest bedroom.
Where can people find more information about what you're doing with tiny homes?
Yeah, well, you should definitely go to operationtinyhome.org if you're interested in looking at kind of what our programs are. There's a variety of kind of assistance programs if you know somebody in need. And then also the Tiny Home Industry Association, we are absolutely a body that is unique in the fact that most industry associations are made up of nothing but the biggest corporations within that space. And part of what we're trying to do, and one of my main roles in that body, is to represent for non-industry people that are also looking to utilize tiny homes as a housing solution, right? The way that I did, right? The DIY builder. So,
right,
you know, we do need individuals who are just advocates that aren't business owners to join the cause to help us get this stuff going. So I would encourage anybody who wants to be a part of seeing tiny homes legal in the future and get this movement past kind of adolescence into maturity to join the Tiny Home Industry Association and help us do it.
Well, Zach, thank you so much. This has been great to have you bring all this information forward and really to put another tool in our toolkit of affordable housing. Thank you, Zach.
Yeah, well, thanks for having me.
Thanks for listening to Changemakers with Katie Gore. To find out more about Katie, go to quadel.com. That's QUADEL.com. This has been a production of Forbes Books Radio.